My name is Jordan Cross. I was an investigative journalist until the story turned on me. What started as a prison interview with a double murderer spiraled into a psychological operation involving voice manipulation, offshore accounts, identity erasure, and engineered morality. They didn't want to silence me. They wanted to rewrite me. This isn't a crime story. This is a warning. You're listening to the final confession of someone who may no longer exist. And if they can erase me, they can erase you too. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. They say you never forget the first time you sit across from a killer. I used to laugh at that. Chalk it up to romanticized crime shows and ego-driven reporters chasing adrenaline highs. But now, as I sit on the other side of bulletproof glass inside Georgia State Penitentiary, my recorder blinking red beside me, I know exactly what they meant. He looked ordinary. That's the first thing I noticed. Elijah Brandt. 39. Brown skin, bald, lean, with a jawline so clean it could slice tape. No face tattoos. No erratic energy. If anything, he looked quiet. A man who had once worn a suit and smiled during HR meetings. A man who could have been your tax advisor or your pastor. The kind who never gets looked at twice. Until you find out he killed two people. "You're Jordan Cross," he said, like he'd rehearsed it. "That's me," I replied, flipping open my notebook, even though I wouldn't write a single thing down. Not yet. I wanted to see how he moved when he talked. Whether he stuttered, whether his eyes darted, whether he looked at me or through me. "Your piece on the Buckhead condo fraud? That was you." I nodded. He smirked. "Thought so. That one burned a few high-end bridges. You read it in here? They pass stuff around." He leaned in, arms resting on the scratch tabletop. "That's why I asked for you." I didn't respond immediately. My mind was already racing. Prisoners ask for journalists all the time. Usually because they want attention. A way to paint themselves as innocent, misunderstood, misjudged. The standard playbook of manipulation. But this felt different. "They say you killed two people," I said finally. "They say a lot of things." Then, after a long pause, he added, "But I'll tell you what really happened. No bullshit. No edits. No trying to win anyone over. Just truth. Raw and ugly. You want that, Miss Cross?" I studied him. Everything about this screamed trap. But my gut, the same gut that's kept me alive through gang neighborhoods, courthouse corruption, and newsroom layoffs, told me he was about to hand me the biggest story of my career. "I want everything," I said, pressing record. He started with her. Of course he did. "She wasn't what she looked like on paper," Elijah said. "Degrees. Medals. A license to practice. Dr. Kendra Voss was the kind of therapist who charged $2,000 a session and made you feel like you were the one getting a deal." "She your therapist?" I asked. Briefly. Until she started turning the sessions into something else. A game. She'd dig into things. Cut deep. Ask about my wife, my habits, my late nights, my thoughts during sex. Then she'd smile. Not in a flirty way. In a knowing way. Like she'd found a loose wire in my head. I scribbled the name. Dr. Kendra Voss. She diagnosed me with shadowed cognitive distortions. Said I suffered from influence fatigue and unresolved shame loops. But I swear to God, Jordan, she was the one manipulating me. Kept my tone even. "You saying she made you kill her?" "I'm saying she played God. With me. With others. And it all started with that damn tape." "What tape?" He glanced around the visitation room as if someone might be listening. Then he leaned in. "She made us record everything. Audio journals. Weekly logs. But one night she forgot to turn hers off. That tape caught what she really was. The voices. The plans. The payments. Offshore accounts. Like something out of a cult movie. Offshore accounts. Shadowed secrets." My pulse quickened. "You still have it?" I asked. "No. But I remember every word. I can tell you everything." I wanted to believe him. But as a journalist, belief is a luxury. What I needed was verification. Motive. Something grounded in facts. So he had me. Hook, line, and bloodied sinker. As the interview dragged on, his voice grew colder. Less apologetic. He described her death with surgical precision, and not once did he say he regretted it. And yet, he didn't sound evil. He sounded used. I ended the session early. Told the guard I needed air. Outside, I stood in the yard under a sun that felt too warm for what I'd just heard. The manipulation. The suggestion that the second murder, the one he didn't even get tried for, was somehow bigger. Political, even. I was in deep. And I'd barely even scratched the surface. You never really expect a murderer to whisper the truth. But Elijah Brandt didn't just whisper, he peeled it. Like skin off fruit. Layer by layer. Calm. Deliberate. Emotionless. And that's what made it worse. Her name was Dr. Kendra Voss. Atlanta-based. Ivy League educated. A licensed trauma therapist with a waitlist of Fortune 500 executives, civic leaders, and rising politicians. She was the kind of woman who didn't return phone calls. You chased her availability. Brushed metal office. Abstract art. Zero family photos. The therapist version of a clean kill. Elijah first met her after a work-mandated psych evaluation. He was managing a data team for a state-funded research project. Something about cognitive psychology and predictive behavior modeling. Lots of server room talk. Market dynamics. Government contracts. That kind of high-pressure, high-scrutiny environment where everyone looked normal until they cracked. She told me she could see things in people, he'd said. Called it true body intelligence. Said the muscles would flinch before the brain knew it. That's where she started. At first, their sessions were clinical. Structured. Textbook. But by the fourth week, the lines blurred. She started commenting on his wife. His tone. His posture. She once asked what he'd do if no one ever found out. She had this voice, Jordan. Soft like breath. But every time she said something, it stuck in my chest. Elijah claimed Dr. Voss operated more like a social engineer than a therapist. She made her clients confess dark thoughts, not to treat them but to own them. She used her sessions to build profiles. Psychological blueprints she could exploit. She started inviting me to these after-hours groups. Unlicensed therapy circles. Called it introspective conversations. She brought in city officials. Married men. Even a prosecutor. We'd sit in a dim office, no phones, no recordings, just her playing puppet master. Emotional exposure under the guise of healing. She called it emotional mitigation therapy. I started digging into her credentials later that night. No red flags, which was a red flag in itself. Too clean. I ran her name through a few dark web database scrapes. That's when I hit something. K. Voss, alias Kendra Vale. Formerly flagged in an anonymous behavioral psychology forum. Linked to consent erosion practices and non-traditional memory reprogramming under cognitive persuasion workshops in Belize. It wasn't a smoking gun, but it was the scent of sulfur. Something rotten. Back in the interview room the next day, Elijah told me about session 7. She handed me a file. Said it was mine. Inside were photos. My face. My wife's face. My search history. Bank statements. A copy of an offshore account I didn't know I had. She said she set it up. For when I was ready to let go of my life. What did she mean by, let go? He looked straight through me. She said some people were made for truth. Others were made for shadows. That I belonged in the shadows. From there things spiraled. She began sleeping with one of the group clients. A married state lobbyist. Then weaponized the affair during a therapy session in front of his wife. Who she'd also invited without telling anyone. The woman attempted suicide a week later. It was swept under the rug as a personal crisis. Elijah said that's when something snapped in him. He started recording sessions even though she warned them never to bring phones. One night she caught him. Called him a coward. Said he was trying to use tools and tactics without understanding the psychology of power. She told me, real men don't record. They act. The night of the murder was July 6th. Rain. Power outage. No traffic cams. Elijah claimed she invited him over for closure. When he arrived, she was drinking wine and playing Debussy. Barefoot. Hair pinned. Files spread across her table. She told me she was transferring my life to a shell identity. That my real name would die that night. That she'd already deleted me from the system. He says he blacked out. But he remembers the smell of iron. The pulse in his jaw. Her voice, laughing even as she hit the floor. She was found the next morning with 3 broken ribs, a punctured lung, and fractured orbital bones. There were no signs of forced entry, no defensive wounds. Nothing stolen. Elijah turned himself in within hours. "I didn't go there to kill her," he said again. "But she'd already murdered who I used to be. I walked out of that prison a different woman, not because I believed him, but because I couldn't stop wondering how much of this story was a confession, and how much was another manipulation. The deeper I dug, the clearer it became. Dr. Kendra Voss didn't just manipulate people, she redesigned them. The thing about shadowed secrets is this: they never disappear. They just migrate. From journals to whispers. From whispers to silence. And if you're not careful, you'll mistake that silence for truth. After my second prison visit, I couldn't sleep. My mind was racing with fragments. His tone, the offshore account, the emotionless way Elijah described her final breath. It didn't feel like a rehearsed lie. It felt lived in. Too lived in. So I did what I always do when something doesn't make sense. I hunted the paper. I started at her last place of practice. Voss Therapeutics. A boutique mental health practice nestled between a yoga studio and a dry-aged steakhouse in Midtown Atlanta. Polished glass. Fake bamboo. A scent I couldn't place. Something between citrus and power. I asked for old files, but HIPAA locked everything behind bureaucracy. Still, the receptionist slipped, told me two therapists resigned within weeks of the murder. Said one of them left the country for personal reasons. I tracked him to Mexico under a new name. Then there were the financials. Elijah mentioned a shell account. Offshore. Belize. The name was vague, but something he said stuck. She didn't just create identities. She buried them alive. I filed a FOIA request on Voss Therapeutics' business partners. It came back redacted, suspiciously redacted. But one name kept showing up in metadata. Algon Holdings. A tech firm. Or at least that's what they claimed. I followed the trail to a clinical research project Voss allegedly ran in conjunction with Algon Holdings. On the surface, it looked innocent. Behavioral pattern testing using machine learning. Server room stuff. But their contracts were buried under layers of fake shell corporations, most of them dissolved. One, however, was still active. Shadow Dynamics Inc. Its founding board included a former defense contractor, a wellness entrepreneur with ties to cognitive psychology research, and an ex-NSA cyber analyst. Their tagline? Mitigating risk through human dynamics and behavioral intelligence. Now I wasn't just neck deep in psychological manipulation. I was in something bigger. Weaponized therapy. Social engineering. Possibly intelligence work masquerading as emotional healing. I reached out to one of her former clients, a tech whistleblower turned recluse. He agreed to talk, but only in person, only at night. We met in a parking garage in Buckhead. Level 3. He kept glancing at the cameras. He refused to use his real name. She used people like simulations, he said. She'd pick us apart, rebuild our personalities, and track the results. It was like psychological A/B testing. Human dynamics as code. He handed me a flash drive. Inside. Audio files. Recordings from those underground introspective conversation sessions Elijah had described. One stood out. It was Kendra's voice. The brain reacts faster to power than pain. That's the secret. If you give someone a sense of control, even if it's artificial, they'll follow you into hell. That's body intelligence. That's emotional surrender. My hands were trembling. She wasn't curing trauma. She was crafting obedience. I revisited Elijah that Friday. He looked thinner. Paler. His voice carried a different rhythm, like someone watching a clock run out. You found her archive, didn't you? He asked before I could speak. I found pieces. She recorded everything. Not just sessions. Dinner conversations. Hotel room confessions. She wanted data. She wanted leverage. Why? He looked at me like I'd asked the wrong question. Because when you know how someone breaks, you know how to rebuild them. That's the game, Jordan. That's the whole damn game. I left the prison with a sense of sickness. A vibration in my spine. This wasn't just a story about a murdered therapist. This was a story about manipulation becoming a business. A currency. And I had a sick feeling. Her death was just the start. Atlanta has two faces. One's on the billboards. New condos, influencer brunch spots, smiling black entrepreneurs on tech panels. The other hides beneath it. behind tinted SUVs, inside therapy rooms and courtroom corners. That's where Kendra Voss lived. By the time I reached chapter 4 of my notes, I stopped thinking of her as a therapist. She wasn't healing anyone. She was curating people, editing them into shapes that suited her purpose. A con artist with credentials. A cult leader with a framed license. I started combing through client patterns, tracking down anyone whose life spiraled in the 6 months before or after their known interaction with her. I found five. A Fulton County judge who had a sudden emotional breakdown and resigned. A motivational speaker who vanished for 90 days, then returned to launch a transcendence business. A women's shelter director who was later arrested for embezzlement and using pseudonyms. A city council member who abruptly withdrew their re-election bid and deleted their digital footprint. And a local artist, Ezra, who I finally convinced to meet me. We talked at a small cafe in Little Five Points. I pretended not to notice that he kept looking over his shoulder like he expected someone to be watching. Ezra didn't drink his coffee. He just cupped it with both hands, shaking. She called it emotional recalibration, he whispered. Said my anxiety wasn't trauma. It was inefficiency. That my shame was a design flaw. What did she do to you? She gave me pills. Not prescriptions. Just pills in unmarked bottles. Said it would help my brain detach from obsolete beliefs. Then she started asking about people I loved. Made me rank them by how easily they could be replaced. I stared. That's not therapy. He smiled without warmth. She wasn't a therapist. She was an architect. Later that week, I got a call from a blocked number. A voice, female, sharp, composed. You're digging in dangerous places, Miss Cross. I didn't flinch. That usually means I'm close. You're not close. You're already inside. That night, someone sent an untraceable file to my work email. No text. No subject line. Inside. A photo. Me. Taken from behind while I stood in the prison yard after interviewing Elijah. They were watching. I dug deeper into Shadow Dynamics Inc. Not the company, but the web around it. Turns out, they funded several social psychology programs through private research initiatives. One of them was called the Influence Project, aimed at testing the effects of charisma and persuasion methods in small group environments. Another was titled PS1, a vague program listed under Cognitive Behavior Recalibration Techniques. I pulled up a redacted file listing Voss as a consultant for applied emotional strategy. She wasn't a rogue therapist. She was part of a design. And Elijah? He wasn't her first patient. He was her first failure. One of her co-therapists had documented notes I found in a cracked laptop tied to a prior case. Brandt is highly suggestible. Responds rapidly to guilt-centric feedback loops. Displays classic shadow attachment tendencies. Rebuildability. Low. Rebuildability. Like he was a project gone wrong. A broken simulation. Hit me then. Maybe she provoked him. Maybe she wanted to see how far he'd go. Elijah had told me, she said some people are made for truth, others for shadows. I used to think he was just reciting trauma. But no. Felt like scripture. Like doctrine. Dr. Kendra Voss didn't work with clients. She reprogrammed them. That night, I opened my laptop to a blinking message. How far are you willing to go, Jordan? No signature. Just a file attached. I clicked. Inside. A video of me in my apartment. Taken through the window. Some confessions are quiet. Others grab you by the throat. Elijah's second kill wasn't listed in court documents. No headlines. No trial. Just a name carved into a buried transcript. Lost beneath red tape and incomplete case files. I found it in the dark. Buried in an anonymous database dump of internal emails from the Georgia Behavioral Review Board. Subject line, threat removed. Attached was an incident report involving a whistleblower named Marcus Helton. At first glance, it read like a suicide. He jumped from a parking deck at 3:12 a.m. Case closed. But there was no suicide note. No surveillance footage. No toxicology report ever filed. And no known reason why a cybersecurity consultant with zero mental health history would suddenly decide to take his own life 2 weeks after submitting a complaint against Shadow Dynamics Inc. Marcus Helton had filed a report accusing the group, and by extension Voss, of covert behavioral mapping and memory suggestion trials, without patient consent. He also named Elijah Brandt. When I brought it up to Elijah during our next interview, he went silent. Not resistant. Not surprised. Puzzled. You think he jumped? He asked. You tell me. He tilted his head. I think he asked the wrong questions. And I think Kendra wanted me to clean it up. That stopped me. Clean it up. He sighed. She used to say that people with bad data had to be removed. That truth isn't about honesty. It's about control of narrative. Marcus had the wrong narrative. So you killed him? Elijah leaned forward, the light catching the scar just beneath his eye. What I did wasn't murder. It was a mitigation technique. I froze. He used the phrase like he was reading from a manual. Like it had been programmed into him. Elijah, did she tell you to do it? He paused. Then gave the most terrifying smile I've ever seen. She didn't have to. I dug into Marcus Helton's background. What I found made me sick. He'd been part of a small team contracted by the state of Georgia to test the security vulnerabilities of behavioral data systems used in therapeutic facilities. In short, he was a digital locksmith hired to break into systems, test them, and flag what could be exploited. 3 weeks before his death, he flagged an audio manipulation protocol embedded in the Voss therapeutic system. A file labeled EchoRecall_73.ps1. That's not just a file name. That's a PowerShell script. A type of digital command that can automate tasks, embed scripts, and, if weaponized, subtly alter metadata, timestamps, even audio logs. Audio manipulation. Therapeutic suggestion. Shadowed truths. Marcus wasn't suicidal. He'd found something. And then he vanished. I confronted Elijah again. This time I brought the file. I want you to listen to something, I said, pressing play. It was a copy of a recovered recording from one of Kendra's group therapy sessions. Voices murmured. Then her voice rose, calm and sharp. Trust is just a placeholder for obedience. If they obey without asking, you've mastered them. If they question, you start over. Obedience or deletion. Those are the only ethical outcomes. Elijah closed his eyes. When I pushed him, I thought I was protecting her. But maybe. His voice cracked. Maybe I was just erasing her mistakes. That night, I sat in my apartment, lights off, laptop open. There was a new message waiting for me. You're learning, Jordan. But you're not ready to lead. No sender. No IP trace. Just a countdown timer. 72 hours. I didn't know what it meant. But it wasn't just about me anymore. I had entered a web of psychological warfare, social engineering, and curated erasure. And the next name on the kill list might be mine. They say the mind can only handle so much uncertainty before it starts inventing certainty. That's what it felt like my mind was racing through a storm without brakes. 1 minute I was an investigative journalist with a notepad and a recorder. The next I was a loose thread in someone else's design. Someone with offshore accounts, influence skills, and the psychological blueprints to undo a person piece by piece. And that countdown timer? It hit 56 hours before it disappeared completely. No message. No explosion. Just gone. Like a threat that didn't need to prove itself. By then I'd started second-guessing everything. My thoughts. My decisions. Even my memory. Every file I opened felt like bait. Every email like surveillance. Even my own voice, recorded on a Zoom interview, sounded distant. Oof, bitch. As if someone had tuned it. Audio manipulation. Server room tricks. Psychological principles designed to fracture focus and blur boundaries. I started sleeping in 2-hour shifts, back to the wall, phone wrapped in foil, laptop battery removed. I even stopped using my real name at hotels. Because if they'd already gotten to Marcus, and they'd already gotten to Elijah, then who exactly was they? My breaking point came when I interviewed Laurel Tamson, a cognitive behavioral specialist who once co-authored a study with Voss on suggestive identity layering. A phrase I hadn't heard before but now couldn't stop thinking about. We met at her office inside Emory University. She looked like every TEDx speaker you've ever seen. Framed diplomas. Neutral tones. That careful smile that people use when they're trying not to get sued. She was brilliant, Laurel admitted. But unstable. She had this belief that memory wasn't real. That it was programmable. And if you could edit memory, you could edit morality. Are you saying she thought right and wrong could be engineered? I'm saying she saw morality as a side effect. A a consequence of repetition and framing. She once said, if you want someone to kill without guilt, you just have to reframe the target as data. The room tilted slightly when she said that. I pressed her. Did she ever mention Elijah Brandt? Yes. She called him her unfinished canvas. Said he lacked sufficient ego to resist reprogramming, but had too much morality to make clean cuts. That made him unpredictable. I asked her if she believed Voss had manipulated him into the murders. Laurel paused, then said something I haven't forgotten. If Kendra wanted to test obedience, she wouldn't tell him to kill. She'd make him want to. I left that office with my stomach in knots. The sky was gray. The kind of gray that hums low in your bones. I got into my car and stopped. My seat had been moved. Just slightly. Not enough to trigger paranoia unless you've been stalked before. I opened the glove compartment. Inside, a single Polaroid. Me. Sleeping. Taken from across the room. On the back. Obedience or deletion, Jordan. Decide. I broke. Called my editor. Told her everything. I expected disbelief. Maybe concern. Maybe a warning to back off. What I got was silence. Then, I think it's time you pivoted off this piece. We're shifting focus toward curated stories. Positive influence. Leadership topics. I blinked. Are you serious? Dead serious. Her tone was flat, unnatural, like someone speaking under duress. Then she said, sometimes truth gets in the way of the narrative. That phrase. It wasn't hers. It was Voss's. From the tapes. That night, I turned on every light in my apartment. Every lock. Every backup drive. Every security camera. And I started recording everything. I narrated every finding. Every connection. Because if something happened to me, someone needed to know. Not just about the murders. Not just about Elijah. But about the system. The market of minds. The business of behavioral control. The network of curated obedience running beneath polite society. My mind was racing. My soul was fraying. And somewhere deep inside me, a voice I couldn't place kept whispering. Obey, or be erased. By now, I'd learned to expect the unexpected with Elijah Brandt. But nothing prepared me for the moment he dropped his voice, looked me dead in the eye and said, she didn't just build people, Jordan. He built the perfect lie. And I was the pilot. He asked for no lawyer, no tape redactions, no deals. Just me, a notebook, and the space between us. And this time he didn't ease into it. He unloaded the full truth like it had been rotting inside him, festering beneath layers of misdirection, cognitive scars, and curated obedience. She told me early on that I wasn't special, Elijah began, voice smooth, detached. Said the ego gets in the way of transformation. So she broke me down. Piece by piece. How? I asked, bracing myself. She created a new morality inside me. One based on systems, not feelings. She called it ethical engineering. Said feelings lie. Systems don't. She convinced me guilt was a virus, and that therapy was about writing new emotional code. I felt cold. You think she brainwashed you? He looked at me like I was missing the point. No. I think she trained me. Like a weapon. Then he dropped the bomb. There were more than just us. I wasn't the only experiment. He laid out the structure like a psychological pyramid. At the top, Voss. Not just a therapist but a behavioral architect. Beneath her, clients chosen not for their needs, but for their influence potential. Lobbyists, strategists, educators. Then the operatives. People like Elijah, programmed to provoke, infiltrate, and manipulate situations in controlled environments. She'd assign us real-world scenarios, Elijah said. Influence and negotiation. Derail a marriage. Seed paranoia in a workplace. And she'd study the fallout. She called it applied influence mastery. I blinked. You mean she ran psychological simulations using real people as pawns? Not pawns, he corrected. Markets. Emotional markets. Designed to test how far perception could be shaped through pressure, seduction, and suggestion. I didn't realize I was shaking until my pen fell out of my hand. Then he told me about the third victim. She never died, not physically, he said, staring out the prison window like he could still see her. Who? I asked. My wife. He said Voss had infiltrated their marriage under the guise of emotional recalibration. Weekly sessions, journals, assignments meant to enhance emotional intelligence. But over time, she isolated his wife, reframed her values, rewired her guilt. One night, she told me I wasn't real to her anymore, that she'd moved on from traditional attachment, that love was a script and she'd outgrown it. He paused, then added, that was the night I knew Voss had won. What chilled me wasn't the detail. It was the delivery. He told me all of this with no malice, no bitterness, just calculation, like someone reading from a manual. And that's when it clicked. He wasn't confessing anymore. He was still in it. Why are you really telling me this, Elijah? I asked. He smiled. Because someone needs to continue the program. And you're almost ready. I left the prison in a fog. Heart pounding. Legs numb. Every hallway felt too narrow. Every eye I passed felt like it knew. He wasn't warning me. He was initiating me. That night, I played the recovered audio logs one more time. But this time I noticed something new. A second voice just beneath Voss's. Layered. Echoed. Time precisely. Whispering messages. Repetition commands. You trust the voice. You trust the voice. You trust the voice. It was a subliminal trigger. Not just therapy. Not just manipulation. Audio-based programming. The implications hit me like a crash. What if every person in those sessions had been reprogrammed using voice layering and memory distortion? What if Elijah's truth wasn't even his? What if none of this had ever been about guilt, redemption, or revenge? What if this entire story, his confession, was part of the final experiment? And then I heard it. My own voice. In one of the recordings. Soft. Muted. Vain. I trust the voice. I trust the voice. I thought journalism would protect me. I believed that so long as I kept the tape rolling, kept the facts clean, and filed the truth, I'd stay ahead of the story. But now I see it for what it is. My bylines were buried long before this investigation began. I was part of a story I never chose. A story being authored from the shadows. And somewhere along the way, I stopped being the writer. The audio file haunted me. My voice. My own voice. Layered beneath Kendra Voss's like a twisted harmony, repeating the phrase. I trust the voice. I played it over and over, looking for edits, skips, unnatural loops. But there were none. I hadn't been spliced into the file. I had been there. I had spoken those words. And yet, I didn't remember it. Not one second of it. Either someone manipulated the recording, or someone manipulated me. I rushed into the newsroom the next morning. My safe haven. At least it used to be. But something was different. The mood. The stares. The silence that stretched too long between hallway steps. I walked to my desk. A note was waiting. Editorial review meeting. 12:30, conference B. Except, there was no conference B. There had never been a conference B. I froze, spun around, and saw Kevin, our senior legal editor, watching me from across the hall. His expression didn't register as concern or friendliness. He was monitoring. I left the office immediately, took the back stairwell, turned off my phone, and dumped it in a random garbage can 6 blocks down Peachtree. That's when I realized I wasn't just being followed. I was being studied. I holed up at a friend's apartment off Moreland. Pop-up. Burner phone. Access to my backup servers. Then I started comparing old drafts, stories I'd written before the Voss case. Before Elijah. That's when I noticed it. Subtle changes. Words I never typed. Phrases inserted mid-sentence. Tone adjusted. Even facts slightly altered to reflect different timelines or implications. Someone had been editing my published work. And each altered story contained keywords, buried language drawn from Voss's lexicon. Ethical persuasion. Human redesign. True body intelligence. Obedience or deletion. They weren't just rewriting my stories. They were training my audience. The realization made me nauseous. I emailed a former copy editor I trusted, Sierra, who left 2 months prior without warning. Her reply came an hour later. Jordan, don't trust the newsroom. I tried to flag it. I traced backline editorial changes to a third-party AI that never existed in our systems. The updates weren't ours. Someone embedded a psychological framework into our content. Their engineering stories, and we're the faces for credibility. I had to get out. You should too. I felt my chest cave in. I wasn't just in danger. I was a vessel. A familiar voice readers trusted. Now co-opted by dark forces using subtle narrative manipulation as a tool for influence. A Trojan horse in heels. That night, someone left a package outside my friend's apartment. No label. No postage. Inside. A stack of typed pages. On the top written in red ink. The final draft. Authored by you. Ghostwritten by her. It was a script. 10 chapters. The exact story I'd been investigating. Every scene, every interview, every inner thought I'd never said out loud. Written out in chilling detail. As if someone had been recording everything. As if they knew the ending already. And on the last page, a line scratched out. Underneath it, Chapter 10, Confession by Jordan Cross. I stared into the mirror that night and didn't recognize myself. Had they gotten to me? Was I already part of the system I was trying to expose? Or had I been the manipulated one all along? My phone buzzed, burner only. No caller ID. One line text. It's time. The story ends tomorrow. I used to believe every story had a subject. A focus. A victim. A villain. Of them I could study from the safety of me. But the line's gone now. And I've crossed it. Because when I followed Elijah Brandt's trail into the dark corners of society's manipulation machine, I didn't just uncover a story. I became one. The day started with silence. No emails. No notifications. Just me sitting on the edge of a borrowed bed with one hand gripping a flash drive and the other gripping fear. The pages from the anonymous package lay scattered across the floor. My life reduced to chapters. I hadn't written them. But somehow, they knew me better than I knew myself. Especially Chapter 10. Confession by Jordan Cross. I made one last call, to a contact deep in data forensics. His name was Dev and he owed me 2 favors and a bottle of scotch. You were right, he said voice low. That audio you sent, your voice repeating, I trust the voice? It's not fake. But it's not you either. I froze. What does that mean? I ran it through forensic AI. Spectral analysis shows vocal synthesis. Someone generated a synthetic version of your voice. It's programmable narration, Jordan. They're not just manipulating minds anymore. They're rewriting reality. Then he paused. And they've already uploaded the file to a private server. Labeled, Jordan Russ under a PowerShell file. Scripted. Controlled. Like a machine-readable version of me. That's when it hit me. I wasn't investigating Elijah. I wasn't uncovering Voss. I was the third target. Elijah's wife had been the first. Marcus Helton the second. Both destroyed not by bullets, but by fractured identities. And now they turned their gaze to me, not to kill me, but to make the world question whether I'd ever existed outside their design. Obedience or deletion. I rushed back to the prison. I needed to see Elijah one last time. They told me he'd been moved. No forwarding. No record. Just gone. I demanded answers. Threatened legal action. Pulled every credential I had left. But the guard, a tall man with eyes like cold coffee, just looked at me and said, Some files are temporary, Ms. Cross. That's how the system was designed. Files. Not people. Files. I walked out of there numb, rain pooling in the cracks of the sidewalk like it was trying to fill the spaces I couldn't anymore. That night, a voice message arrived. No caller ID. Just static. Then Voss's voice. Come. Clinical. The third target isn't a person, Jordan. It's belief. Belief in identity. Belief in authorship. We made you believe you were the writer. But you're the echo. The response. The outcome. Then a pause. Thank you for participating in the Influence Project. Your compliance has been noted. My phone died. Not powered off, died. As if something inside it gave up. I sat in the dark for what felt like hours. No sound. No answers. Just my breath. And the pulsing certainty that I was no longer alone in my own story. I pulled out the flash drive I'd been carrying for weeks. My backup. My truth. My last shot at control. But when I plugged it into my laptop, file not found. Everything gone. Replaced by a single line of code. Run into script, final underscore class 1. I felt something break inside me. A fracture deeper than fear. Wider than doubt. Because now I couldn't tell if anything I'd uncovered was real. Or if this was the script all along. If you're hearing this, it means I never made it out. Or maybe I did, but not as myself. Not as Jordan Cross. I don't know anymore. I've recorded this confession not for fame, not for vindication, but for something far more desperate. To remember who I was. Because if I don't, they win. The day it all ended didn't come with alarms or flashbacks. No gunfire. No black vans. Just a soft knock on the door of the safe house. I shouldn't have answered it. But something inside me said I'd already been found. Already rewritten. The woman standing there looked familiar. Pressed blouse. Neutral tones. Clipboard. No emotion. Just structure. She said she was from a behavioral remediation bureau. She said I'd been flagged for identity drift. She used my name like it was optional. I slammed the door. Locked every bolt. But it was too late. When I opened my laptop, everything I thought I'd secured, every interview, every tape, every file, was replaced by a single looping video. Me, sitting in a chair, speaking directly into the camera. Hi, I'm Jordan Cross, and I'd like to report a false memory. It didn't stop. It played on repeat. I watched myself say it 20 times before I collapsed. I didn't remember filming it. They'd done it. The last phase. Narrative overwrite. I wasn't just being silenced. I was being reauthored. Not erased, but remixed. Not eliminated, but repurposed. Because in a world where perception is power, the most dangerous thing isn't censorship. It's credibility decay. Once you're seen as unstable, everything you say becomes suspect. Every truth sounds like fiction. Every fact like conspiracy. They didn't need to kill me. They just needed you to stop believing me. I tried to upload my final findings. To Reddit. To underground news servers. To dead drop journalists I once trusted. But every time the system kicked me back with a warning. File incompatible with current story parameters. Current story. That's all I ever was. So now I sit here in a room that isn't mine, in a life that may have never been, with the last thread of autonomy I can offer. My voice. Not the synthetic version they engineered. Not the one they programmed to obey. But this one. The broken one. The real one. The one that remembers Kendra Voss. That remembers Elijah Brandt. That remembers Marcus Helton standing on the edge of a parking deck, blinking against the floodlights of a world that refused to believe him. And now it's me, staring into the same lights. I don't know how this ends. Maybe they overwrite this too. Maybe they bury it under thousands of curated stories, engineered emotions, and ethical marketing tactics wrapped in feel-good podcasts. Or maybe you hear this. Maybe you remember me. Not the version they wrote, but the one who fought like hell to stay awake. So here it is, the final confession. I was manipulated. I was redesigned. But I never obeyed. Not fully. Not completely. And if you're listening to this now, you haven't either. Which means there's still hope. This is Jordan Cross. Or what's left of her. Signing off. Not as a journalist. But as proof. That they don't get to write every ending.